All right, happy Lag BaOmer, everybody. It is the 33rd day of the Omer, and I'd like to introduce this class, which I called Your Power to Bless Others, as follows. We're going to do several stories, but this story, I'm going to tell you only part of it. And all of the stories, hopefully we'll get through seven of them, is going to lead up to the end of this story, but I'm going to deliberately leave you hanging. Every story, incidentally, is true. Once upon a time, a very wealthy man disowned his daughter because this daughter decided to marry a person he didn't approve of. And as a result of this woman's behavior, which if you're a parent and you've had to deal with a child who wants to do something like that that you don't approve of, listen to how this story eventuates. This story eventuates that every single person on this call, in fact, every single Jewish person, has been positively impacted by this story. So today, when we say your power to bless others, it means two things. One is we can be a blessing for other people in ways that we're never going to know. And it can be within our lifetime. It can be after our lifetime. We're going to see that. But we also mean something else. And both of these are things that we're going to get to in this class. Of course, it relates to the Insights for Living, the story that we are dealing with Abraham, and it has to do with the story of today. What is Lag BaOmer? Rabbi, I haven't heard of that. I don't know what it is, or I don't remember what it is. We're going to get through all of that. We're going to weave it all together in this class because you have the power to give verbal blessings to people. Did you know that? Well, now you do. And that comes straight from the narrative in the midst of which we're dealing with. It was about 4,000 years ago, maybe a drop under, but basically we'll say it 4,000 years ago. The Almighty said to Avram, go from your land to a place I'm going to tell you. And he says these words, Veheye Berocha, you will be a blesser. Now, I know that's not really correct English. You will be a blesser, Veheye Berocha means you will have the power to give blessings to others. Now, God didn't say that for 4,000 years ago, and it ended with him. But it is a power that goes down the generation to the Jewish people. And as we are going to elaborate, as we go through the stories, I would like you to remember one of the introductions, which is, Al tihi birchas hedyet kal be'enecha. Sages tell us, a blessing from a regular person, don't think of it as nothing. And we're going to explain why that is. You know, the Almighty works in very strange ways. I had prepared a class last week, and I started saying in the class, I was doing the editing, I realized that I said, I'm not going to explain one of the sayings of our sages that we all are supposed to live with every single day, and then I never got to it. Well, I was disappointed, and I realized, okay, so how am I going to set up next week's class? But then when I started preparing, I realized that that was the Almighty working his mysterious ways so that I could connect very thoroughly this day, Lag BaOmer, and the celebration that it is, which you're going to hear about, and what we are learning about using this quote of our sages, which says, Chayev Adam Loimar, a person is required to say. Now, when they say a person is required to say, why are you required to say it? Because it's something that we need to say it to ourselves over and over again, because otherwise we're going to overlook it, we're going to forget, and the impact is not going to be there. What are we required to say? Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. The universe The universe was created for me. Now you might say, how could they say such a self-centered statement? If I say the universe was created for me, you know who I'll become? I'll become Alexander the Terrible. In English, they say Alexander the Great, which means I'll have aspirations to conquer the whole world. And even if it means a bloodbath of millions of people, so be it, because the whole world was created for me. Now, he wasn't the only one. We have, unfortunately, too many to list. But when our sages say something like that, they mean something different. I'd like to use the analogy, and believe me, we are getting to all the stories that I said. I hope we get to relate all of them. Let's imagine you're running a business, let's say you work for a big corporation. Now, if you're the CEO, you might say, my main purpose here is, from the company's point of view, to provide dividends for the investors. Maybe you'll say that, whether it's right or wrong. Maybe you'll say, well, I go to work so I can get a good salary and a good bonus and give my family a good life. You could say that. But what about the people who are in middle management? So they might say, I'm going to work, and my particular department has to do with research and development. So my particular department, my purpose for going to work, is to see that the company is going to have a future in 5 years, in 10 years, and in 15 years. That's the Department of Research and Development. The other department head, he says, well, I need our company to be sustainable, whether I believe in sustainability fully or partially. Just in order to stay in business, it has to be viewed by the public as being sustainable. That's why I go to work. And then you have people who are dealing with the finances and the legal matters pertaining to finances, and that's why they go to work. Of course, you have the people who are actually making it run. You have the salespeople, and if there are no salespeople, the company goes bankrupt because no customer is staying forever, and you always need to expand the pipeline so that you don't suffer and collapse because of attrition. And then you have the people who are actually making the product, and if you don't have the product, then what's your company providing? Nothing. And what about the department which makes sure that there's quality control? Now, every single person in that company, if their work did not exist, the company would fold. It doesn't matter how good the CEO is. If quality control is not going to do its job, not only will you have too many returns, you'll have people who just won't come back to you because they just don't want to deal with it. They'll just click another button on another website and get a different product. There's enough competitors around the world. Every single person can say truthfully, without my input, this corporation couldn't survive. I will use one more example just because today we can appreciate it even more than we could appreciate it every day, which we could. Imagine if the cleaning crew in a hospital were careless. Well, let's not imagine it because it's just too dark. And the cleaning crew doesn't even have to speak English, but they do have to do a good job if people are not going to die and spread disease. With this in mind, we can understand completely what our sages say when they say, every person has to say, the world, the universe was created for me. Because you might say, nobody's indispensable. Yes, it's like saying, well, if we fire the entire cleaning crew, we can get another company that'll be the cleaning crew. Maybe you'll say so. Maybe it'll be a better company. Maybe it'll be a worse company. Maybe you'll uncover things that you just didn't want to have, and you'll stick with the present company. And then in a similar way, every single person, except that it's more acute when it comes to each one of us. Because, you know, cleaning companies, they could be very similar. But no human being can be similar. So the whole universe, yes, in order for you to fulfill your purpose, in order for me to fulfill my purpose, the entire universe has to be there, including the things I don't know about. I don't know what's going on in beneath the ocean. It doesn't matter. In order for me to fulfill my purpose, everything in this universe, and especially everything that I encounter within my sphere, whether intentionally or in passing, it's all part of my purpose. That does not detract from the fact that everything within your sphere and within your life is necessary for God's plan. And this is why our sages say, Chayev Adam Lema, a person has to say, because a person has to keep reminding themselves, because we all know too well, it's much easier in a way, even though it may be painful, it is much easier in a way to just say, well, who's going to miss me? And of course, when we say that, we're not thinking about God, because that would assume that God made you by accident or made you as a mistake. Well, if that's true, then I don't believe in that God, and I don't think you should do anything for such a God. But since God is the only perfect one, this whole universe can only fulfill its purpose if there's somebody like me in it. A person has to keep reminding themselves of that, including many years ago, and this was approximately 2,000 years ago, a certain young girl decided that she was going to marry somebody who was a worker in her father's vast fields and vast wealth. The father didn't approve, quote, well, I shouldn't say quote, but I'm making up the quote, but can you just imagine it? How could somebody like you marry a farmer? Now, try eating without farmers in the world, but that was already 2,000 years ago, so it's too late for me to discuss that. Well, if you marry this man, I'm disowning you. I'm not saying people should go around doing that with their parents. I'm just telling you this true story. This is what happened, and every one of you, whether you know it or not, is hugely impacted by it, as you're going to find out. So you are a blessing. So what God has to say on the subject is, don't lie to yourself. You are a blessing to the world. And furthermore, as we're about to hear, your words can also bring blessing to individuals, because the Almighty made a commitment to Avram that I'm giving you and your descendants the power to draw divine blessing. Now, here is the first true story. It happened with somebody who I know from yeshiva, and his name is Alter Bukit. If I remember, it was Alter Bukit. It's a family of Bukits, and I believe it was Alter Bukit. And in order to tell this story, I need to give a little bit of background. This day of Lag BaOmer, as I said earlier, you're going to hear what it is, has been a great celebration ever since 2,000 years ago, and it's been a day of great miracles. The second Rebbe of Chabad, known as the Mittler Rebbe, he would go out into the field. He wasn't the first one to do that. The Baal Shem Tov used to do that with children and make a parade in a field, even though parades then, it was just parading around in the field. He would go out into the field, and he would give lots of blessings, and there were many miracles. The miracles were primarily relating to children, which also definitely includes people who could not become pregnant, and they received a blessing and they became pregnant. So a few years before the story I'm about to tell, a certain individual wrote a note, or went over to the Rebbe on Lag BaOmer, and I'm pretty sure that he actually said it verbally. He said, "You are the seventh in this dynastic lineage." He didn't speak in English, he spoke in Yiddish, but I'm giving it my paraphrasing. He says, "You are the seventh of this dynastic lineage, and we know about the second Rebbe and his miracles on this day of Lag BaOmer, especially relating to children. And my wife and I are not able to become, are not able to have a child, and we've been through all the medical and so on and so forth. And since, as you have explained," he's saying to the Rebbe, "that you are Mamalam, that every Rebbe fills the place of his predecessor, so then you are filling the place of the previous, all the way up to the second Rebbe, and therefore you have within yourself to give a blessing for children on this day, and I am asking you for a blessing for children on this day." And you might say, well, he put the Rebbe on the spot, and you are correct. The Rebbe gave him a blessing, and they had a child or children. I don't know the actual further details of that story, but that story is absolutely true, because once that got out, every single Lag BaOmer thereafter, families who couldn't have children, they would line up by the Rebbe's house or by 770. And as the Rebbe was coming into shul or going out, they would ask him for a blessing for children. And the Rebbe would give blessings. Now, there were some people who he did not respond to. And don't ask me to explain it. But those people whom the Rebbe responded to, they all had children. And needless to say, when a person to whom the Rebbe did not respond, it was very difficult for them. I will point out that the Rebbe himself did not have biological children. One day, somebody went into the Rebbe in a private audience asking for a blessing for children. And the Rebbe said to him, "I also don't have children." So this person said, "But you are a Rebbe," meaning that you have the power to bless the subject of today's class. "But you are a Rebbe." And the Rebbe answered, and I just want to say something, because as I'm telling this story, I'm actually having an emotional episode right now. And I want you to understand that I'm not just a talking head, because I have told this segment a few times over the years, and it has happened at times that sitting around the table, you know, this was live, were a few times a couple who didn't have children. And I don't believe, don't tell me their whole life secrets, I don't believe it was by their choice. And it was very difficult for me to say this story, especially as I'm going to continue it, with them being present, because it's one of the greatest sufferings in the world. So even as I'm telling this story, I don't know exactly everybody who tunes in or who is going to be listening to this recording when it's eventually posted. I just want you to understand that even though I'm telling a miraculous story, this is, in Yiddish we say it's an Iberlebenish for me to tell this story. It's I'm in an emotional state right now, and I could never look up when I would tell this story, because I did not want to look at their eyes, those people who are not blessed with children. So anyway, back to the story. The Rebbe says to him, you know, he says to the Rebbe, "But you're a Rebbe." And the Rebbe says to him, the Rebbe says to him, "Not a day goes by that I don't think about it." So why would the Rebbe not say to certain people that he gives them a blessing, and to most of the others he did? I don't know if I knew how to connect to the spiritual realm, which we're going to explain a little bit later. then obviously I would be able to give blessings on that level. Coming back to this particular story, this was a year, I believe it was a year when Lagbom was on a Sunday, which meant anytime Lagbom was a Sunday, so in New York they have a parade, and you're going to see a video clip of it, I really hope we get to it, of a Lagbom parade. And so they told the people who wanted blessings for children, instead of being by 770, which is it's not practical, they should go to the Rebbe's house, which is on President Street. And they got certain people things should be organized, shouldn't be pushing and shoving. I mean, everybody who shows up is desperate. Their heart is breaking because this is their last hope. So this Rabbi Bukit, who is now a Chabad emissary, and I forgot where, and the truth of the matter is I wanted to read the story as he wrote it just to give it added authenticity. And I had sent it to the printer as part of my preparation either yesterday or the day before. And I went to the printer right before this class to take it from the printer, and it's not there. So obviously I didn't do something correct. I started looking for it. I can't find it. But I'm just telling you how authentic this is. Everything is exactly correct. Anyway, so this Rabbi Bukit, he was my age. Well, he is my age, I should say. He's a few months older, maybe. And this is 1984, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe a year or two before. Maybe 83 or 82. At any rate, so he's asked to help out by the Rebbe's house, just that it should be organized, as I described. He says, since I'm not a person to sort of tell other people what to do, and remember, he's a young man, unmarried, he said, I would like to be the one by the Rebbe's car to open the door and close it. You may think that's a simple task you're soon going to hear. Anyway, the Rebbe comes out, and from the Rebbe's house to the curb to get into the car took 20 minutes. And he says, everybody is asking for a blessing, and people are crying, and many the Rebbe is answering. And those who didn't get the answer, I can't even imagine. And as the Rebbe gets into the car, a man comes running. He's from a different neighborhood. You'll soon see why this is relevant. And, Chabad people, we dress a certain way. It's not a law. It's just a practice, and whatever the reasons are, it's called recent history. It's not important for now. But I'm saying this because this fellow, the way he's dressed, and I'll use words, maybe you know what they mean. He has the long payas, curled payas, gekreizelte payas, and you can just see by his garb that he's from a different neighborhood. And it happens to be that he is a follower of Satmar, which for some of you may mean something very significant to this story. It's too much for me to explain right now. Let's just say briefly that he has a Rebbe and sees the world differently than Chabad. And he came here because of the reputation that I told you about. So whether it's because he came the last minute, because in Brooklyn, to fight with the traffic and fight for a parking space, is you can't even believe what that is if you've never lived in a city that just doesn't have enough room for all of its people. We are used to the wide open spaces here. So anyway, he comes running in. And as the Rebbe is getting into the car, this Rabbi Bukit is holding the door because it's crammed with people. And the pressure is mounting, but he's holding it. And then this Satmara individual, this guy, sticks his head into the car before the door closes, and he asks the Rebbe for a blessing. And so this sort of causes everything to stop, and the pressure is mounting, just because people, it's like crushing crowds. And this fellow says he took all of his strength that the door should not be compressed onto the Rebbe and this fellow. So he's struggling with it, but he's the closest to hear exactly what happened. He asks the Rebbe for a blessing, and the Rebbe gives him a blessing. And then he starts pulling his head out of the car. The Rebbe then says to him, in Yiddish, but I'll say it in English, your child is going to need to have someone to play with. And this fellow didn't understand what is the Rebbe saying to him. Maybe you don't understand, but it is the way of holy people to say certain things in order to elicit a certain response for the spiritual flow of the moment. And he didn't understand. And it's understandable, as I've said before, when people have been through the medical system and they're married for who knows, 8 years, 10 years, or more, 15 years, and they don't have children. And, and Jewish life is so much around the family table. Every Shabbat they get together. And for them, there's no children at the table. So it's like Gehenna, it's like hell, and they're sitting at other people's table, we're the poor guys, I agree, somebody else's table, it doesn't matter how much money they have in the bank, they So this fellow is so overwhelmed, he doesn't understand. The Rebbe says to him again, this child is, now you realize the Rebbe is speaking that it's a foregone conclusion that there's going to be a child. And needless to say, the Rebbe has never met this fellow's wife, because if he's running and pushing through the crowds, even if she's there, she's maybe somewhere behind. Her head is certainly not stuck into the car. And what does he know about the medical reasons? They probably know. So the Rebbe says again, this child is probably going to need a child to play with. He didn't understand. So the Rebbe says to him, Zog Amen, which means say Amen. Now in English they say Amen. I don't know exactly what it means to people when they say it in English, but the word Amen means a lot of things, and it's like a veritable class actually. But the short version is, it means I acknowledge and accept what was just said, or I give strength to what was just said. So the Rebbe told him to say Amen, and the Rebbe says again, the child is probably going to need another child to play with. And he says, Amen, because he understands that the Rebbe is blessing him with two children, not one. And as would be discovered 15 years later, his wife gave birth to twins. Now this fellow, Rabbi Bucket, he forgot about it. He got married. He moved to do the Chabad work. I forgot the name of the place where he's at. And you know what Chabad work is, since you're on this class, and you know what it's all about. In over 100 countries around the world, just in BC, there's over 10 of families like us, and so on. 1 year, it is Lag BaOmer. It is this day, and he is in New York because of a yahrzeit. Now I am, if I'm remembering correctly, his mother is buried in the same cemetery as the Rebbe, the Montefiore Cemetery in New York. And he has come to New York to visit his mother's grave. So, of course, if he's going to that cemetery, of course, he's going to visit the Rebbe's cemetery. And he is there at 5 a.m. I think he wrote why. I don't remember. Whatever the reason is, he's there 5 a.m. And when he's there 5 a.m., in the Rebbe's Ohel, O-H-E-L, Ohel, L as in Larry, you might want to write that down. You'll soon see why. It's going to come later on. He sees there's another fellow. And this is a fellow. He's not Chabad. And he kind of looks also with the beard and the curly payas. But there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of them, in Brooklyn itself. And he has two boys there. And they're, around bar mitzvah age or something like that. Maybe I forgot if he said the exact age. And they're davening and so on. And then he was curious because it's 5 a.m. So why would he bring his boys here at 5 a.m.? So he says to the, in Yiddish, now this is a very holy place. People don't just schmooze for no reason. But he had long forgotten the story that I just told you. And he asks this fellow, he says, how come you're here at this hour? He said, because 15 years ago, because these are the Rebbe's children. 15 years ago, it was Lag BaOmer, which is today. And I was by the Rebbe's house. And I asked him for a blessing for children, and he gave me a blessing, and we had twins. So now this Rabbi Bucket says, were you the fellow, perhaps, who stuck his head into the car? He says, yeah, that was me. And the Rebbe said to you, this child needs a child to play with. Yes, yes, and he confirms it. So he says, well, I was the one who was holding the door under the crush to make sure that the Rebbe and you were not getting crushed. So that was the story. Because this day is a special day for blessings. So when God says to Avram 4,000 years ago, Veheyeh Barocho, and the our sages tell us, and Rashi 900 years ago brings it in his commentary, and he says, writes these words, HaBarochos Nesunos HaBarachot Netunot Biyadecha, the ability to give blessings is in your hand. And he bequeathed it to his descendants all the way down to us, so that a millennia and a half ago and more, our sages said that the blessing of a plain person should not be trivial to you. Al tehi birchas hedyet kal be'enecha, which is the real reason why we give blessings. We're not just wishing everybody the best of health. Your blessings have power, as we're going to find out now. So this is the meaning, that you have the power to bless. And by the end of this class, I hope that you will have enough awareness of this to be inspired to give blessings to people easily. And it's very easy and good to get into the habit. May the Almighty bless you. God bless you. Just don't say it when you're in the washroom with somebody, because that's not a clean place or in the bathroom. I really mean it. But other than that, there's no reason. You could say it to anybody. You don't only have to say it to Jewish people. I say it to non-Jewish people. I won't say I say it to everybody. I'm hoping that the person I'm saying it to will accept it. Not everybody will, because may, you know, and you just sort of, I go by my hunch, which I am positive is wrong one way and the other way from time to time. But my point is that I do it. My point is that I do that because we are given the power to bless. What I would like to share with you now is a very, very dramatic story. See, I gave you a story now that happened to an individual. I want you to know that amongst the Jewish people, miracle stories like this are common for millennia, but they are not the reason that we believe in God, and they are not the reason that we believe in Judaism. This is not necessary as a point for this class, but it is necessary because of the world we live in. So this is a parenthetical and point, very important point. In the Torah portion of so it's in the fifth book, the fourth portion of the fifth book, the Almighty talks about a false prophet. And the Almighty says that what will happen if this false prophet says to go worship idols and he performs a miracle? You should know that God is testing you to see if you believe. In other words, God is saying very clearly, even though God has said you can give blessings and that miracles can happen, God says very clearly, and I'm paraphrasing it now. It's not this way, but this is what it means. You don't believe that what Moses said is true because he split the sea before your eyes. That's not the reason. You believe in God because, and I'm going to say these words, and I would invite anyone to challenge me. If enough of you challenge me, I will make it as an interrupt element of a future class. And I would like to say to you, it can be scientifically proven. Now, everyone who has advanced degrees, you're about to chop my head off. It doesn't matter. It is possible to scientifically prove that there is a creator and that he communicated his wisdom to the Jewish people. So I'm going to leave that for another time. And if you take the bait, I'd be so delighted. But it just should be enough of you that if we do it, enough of you should come to such a class. But the reason I interjected, because we're going to tell about a lot of miracles. And as I said earlier, every single story is true. It is not within my integrity to do otherwise. I'm going to tell you something that happened in public. And thank God for technology. It's on video. I'm going to play for you an 8-minute professionally produced clip about what happened in the Six-Day War. Now, because some of you are on the phone, you're going to be hearing the Rebbe speaking in Yiddish just for a couple of minutes. I want to tell you in advance the approximation of what it says. Those of you who are watching by video, whether you are video muted or not, you're going to be able to see it. But the point is that in this public state where there are thousands of men, women, and children covering not only the width of what you're going to see, but covering an 8-lane highway called Eastern Parkway, which means there are 2 parking lanes, which means cars can drive while cars are parked on 2 sides. And you have 2 of these, one on either side of the street. And in between, when the cars really go speeding and there's no stopping, it's 3 lanes each way for a total of 8 lanes. 3 plus 3 plus 1 and 1 is 8-lane highway. And that's the amount of people, men, women, and children who are there. And it's on this day in 1967 when Israel was afraid of a Holocaust repeat, that the state of Israel, only established some years earlier in 1948, was going to be wiped out. You are now going to see this presentation, and the Rebbe is going to speak. He's going to use biblical quotes that your enemies are going to disperse from in front of you. You may chase them in 10 directions, and they'll run away in 10 directions, and 100 of you will be able to chase 10,000. These kind of quotes. He says the Jews in Israel are finding them in a particular situation, and he uses a very interesting choice of words. He uses the word lager. Now, I don't know if you know what that word lager. Lager can mean concentration camp. Lager can mean pressure, and lager can mean a situation, usually a pressured situation. So he uses this multiple interpretation word in Yiddish, and he says the people of Israel find themselves in a lager. I'm saying the Yiddish, the actual quote, where God protects them. And for those who are listening to this recording eventually, you'll need to look it up on YouTube to see this clip. It's in a few different formats, but it's there for the open. So I'm going to do that now, and it all relates to our subject matter today.
May 28, 1967, was a day of three pivotal speeches. In Cairo, Egyptian President Gamal Abdel Nasser held an international press conference. In Tel Aviv, Israeli Prime Minister Eshkol spoke to the people of Israel. And in New York, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, addressed world Jewry. Each of these messages attracted extreme attention. After all, it was only 8 days before the Middle East would be plunged into war. Before hundreds of the world's press, Nasser unabashedly broadcast Egypt's intentions. The existence of Israel is in itself an aggression. We will not accept any coexistence with Israel. The war with Israel is in effect since 1948. In plain words, the Arab armies led by Egypt intended to wipe Israel off the map. This was not an empty threat. Egypt, Syria, and Jordan were mobilizing vast armies on Israel's border and broadcasting the same intentions. On the same day, Prime Minister Eshkol delivered a message over the waves of Israel's national radio station, Kol Yisrael. While Nasser had spent weeks rallying the Middle East to a combined military onslaught against an isolated Israel, Eshkol had maintained an ominous silence since the start of the crisis. He now decided to reassure the jittery public that the IDF was adequately prepared to defend itself, and that Israel was navigating a diplomatic resolution through international channels. Neither was fully true. The military intelligence and civilian leaderships all predicted impending disaster. The Israeli public was already bracing itself for the most horrifying possibilities. Eshkol stumbled nervously, and Israel trembled. Shimon Peres later described the effect of Eshkol's fumbled address.
Eshkol's radio speech was simply traumatic. In retrospect, one could probably say that the public overreacted. But at the time, when you didn't know what is going to happen, and the whole world is applauding Nasser, at a time when we lost our self-confidence, and the worst doubts were voiced, the impression it created was of doubt and fear.
An Israeli colonel wrote, with his stuttering, he conveyed more insecurity and confusion. I heard that soldiers at the front burst out crying. An already alarmed Israel was thrown into panic. That same day, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, head of the Chabad-Lubavitch movement, and a revered spiritual leader of world Jewry, delivered a public address that was broadcast around the globe, including a simultaneous translation from Yiddish to Hebrew on Israel's Kol Yisrael radio station that Eshkol had used only hours earlier. It was Lag BaOmer, a day of great rejoicing and mystical significance in the Jewish calendar. This year, though, Jewish hearts worldwide winced in worry over the existential threat that hung over the Jews of Israel. They had reason to fear, for it was now the Sunday before the outbreak of war. The Rebbe had called for a grand Lag BaOmer Jewish Children's Parade to publicly express Jewish pride and to encourage Torah observance. 20,000 Jewish school children from across America heeded the call, gathering with their parents and educators in the giant leaf-lined boulevard facing the Rebbe's headquarters in Brooklyn, New York. The Rebbe personally addressed the rally, but his forceful prediction took the world by surprise. A singular voice of optimism in a universe of despair. The Rebbe's words electrified the Israeli public. Newspapers across Israel, regardless of affiliation, from Haaretz to Al HaMishmar, converted the Rebbe's astonishing message into headlines of hope. God is watching over the Holy Land, and salvation is near, cried the headlines of Yediot Achronot, an Israeli daily. The prediction seemed so utterly at odds with that of Israel's own leadership and the grim reality growing ever more dense around Israel's borders, just 8 days shy of the sixth war.
The truth of the matter is, this video clip could be even longer, where you will hear some of the actual generals and how they describe how in 6 days, what actually happened. And maybe what I'll do on the WhatsApp group, I will send a link to this presentation done differently, the same idea, and it just because then you can watch it at your own time. I have so many other stories that I need to squeeze into today's class. When you actually hear the generals describing, even generals from the other side, why they fled. So now the question becomes, how does a person know to say these words that are completely contrary? And if I wanted to dwell on this point, then I would show you a video clip of the Rebbe's predictions before the Gulf War, which I'll just say it as follows, the first Gulf War, that is. I was teaching in Maimonides School, which is what King David School was called then, in Vancouver, and a boy came in with a VHS, if you remember what that is, those cartridges for videos, yes? And it was of the Vancouver news, morning news, because the whole world is terrified that Saddam Hussein is going to send biological warheads into Israel. And there's one person, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who says that there's not going to be a war in Israel. It's the safest place in the world. And I could elaborate on that. And how in the world does a person say that? Of course, in hindsight, this is the year 2020. So hindsight 2020, of course, is amazingly good. So God says that I give you the blessings. Now, there's a slight nuance here. It's not that the Rebbe just said a blessing. He also made a prediction. But I'm not going to worry about that nuance because it's still germane to what we're speaking about. How does it happen that great people can give blessings? Because these are stories that I not only know and I can verify them on video, so I'm sharing them with you. But I'm going to also share some other stories, as you're about to hear. How does it happen that a great person can give blessings and the blessings can come to pass? Many years ago, there was a Hasidic Rebbe. His name was Reb Meir of Premishlan. Premishlan, a place somewhere in Europe. I don't know if it's Poland or somewhere thereabouts in Eastern Europe. And he was an elderly man. Every morning, he would go to immerse in a body of water, like a mikveh. I'm not explaining that right now because that's too much of a digression. And there were two ways of getting there. One way was to go around a very steep mountain or a hill. In Yiddish, the word barg means both. It means a steep hill or a veritable mountain, not necessarily like the one behind me, which is, I think it's Mount Baker. behind me in the image. At any rate, so in the winter, nobody would go over this barg, this hill or mountain, because everybody would slip. They'd just break their heads. And if anyone has ever slipped on ice, you know actually exactly what that's about, and it's germane to what's coming next. The Reb Meir of Premishlan, as elderly as he was, would nevertheless walk every morning to go immerse in the holy waters, and he would go over the mountain, doesn't matter what day of winter it was, how icy it was, and he never fell. People in Premishlan would speak in awe about this wonder rabbi who's able to do it. So two young guys, they said, well, what's the big deal? Just because he can do that, that means that he's a holy man. We'll show, we could do the same. Now they're young. I don't know whether they prepared themselves with good shoes or not. It really doesn't make a difference. And they start going up this steep hill. And of course, they slip. And if you've ever slipped and fallen on a hill where your body rolls down, it's one of the frightening experiences that a person can have. Oh boy, I'm reminded of a time when it happened to myself. That's why I had to pause, because I go where I speak. At any rate, they hurt themselves really, really badly. After their recuperation, they figured they have to find out, so how does this old rabbi do it? They asked him, and he said, I'll say it in Yiddish. These words are world famous from this story. He says it in third person. As Meirl is zugebunden von oben, fällt nicht unten. When Meirl, he didn't call himself Rabbi Meir. Meirl is like what a mother would call a child who's called Meir, and you add on a suffix of endearment, Meirl. That's how it works. So he says about himself, as Meirl, when Meirl is connected above, he does not fall below. And that became world famous, because that is an exact explanation how Abraham was given the power to give blessings. God says there's a way to connect spiritually to the upper realm and therefore impact the divine energy as it comes to this world. So when it comes to this world, it will come in a different manner, in a manner that people will consider as a blessing. And I'm giving you that power to be that connected. Now, a person who is more spiritually connected, their blessings have greater impact. And the Jewish people who have been living with these miracles also know that we don't worship people. We only worship God. We do go to people and ask them for a blessing. Well, who said you could do that? Why don't you ask God straight? Because 4,000 years ago, God said to Abraham, I'm giving you the ability to bless. In other words, people should help out others, not only physically, but also with their blessing. And if the clock stands still, which it won't, I have a longer story, and I'm very tempted to tell it next week about a regular person and the power of their blessing. But I'm going to try and get through as many stories as I can. I was going to tell a very personal story that happened on Lag BaOmer with our family, in particular my wife and myself, and a son of mine and a daughter of mine who were directly involved, and also it impacted my father-in-law of blessed memory, and it impacted our greater family. So if that is also getting you, tempting you to find out, that's fantastic, because I need to tell the story. Simi has told that story. Some of you have heard it many times, and it's very different when you can tell a story that is your own story. And it's really, and this is something that happened after the Rebbe passed away. Simi was in New York and went last night, the night of Lag BaOmer, to the Rebbe's Ohel and asked a question. And as the Rebbe said when his father-in-law passed away, people asked him, how are we going to know what to do now? And he said, go to the Rebbe's grave, meaning the previous Rebbe, ask him, he'll find a way to answer. And I'm going to stop there because I don't have time for that story. And this is after me, I'm admitting this in public. After years of hearing all of these miracle stories, many of which I knew personally, many, and I would say to myself, when is our turn? And our turn happened many years after the Rebbe passed away, and it's impossible for such a story to be a fluke. So when I tell that story, you're going to hear it. It's best if you hear it straight from Simi, but I could tell you the same details. I cannot tell that story today, even though it's in front of me on my list. So Let us now talk about this day. And we're going to go backwards in time, because that's what we're doing. I told a story about the Rebbe, and then I told a story that was more recent. It was in 1984 or thereabouts. Then we told the story in 1967. Now we're going to back Rabbi Meir Perel Mishlan. So that was, I don't know, 150 years ago, let's say. Now we're going to go back to a story that happened 185 years ago at the grave of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. See, now you know why I sort of tantalize you with telling you about the story happened at the Rebbe's grave. Because the next story that you do need to hear, which happened, it happened in 1835, that's 185 years ago. In 1835, this story happened on this day at the grave of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, which is germane to everything about this class. And there is a custom in Israel that people light bonfires on this day or last night, especially around the area where Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is buried. It's the anniversary of his passing, which we are going to get to. So the practice has been for many years, and it was in 1835 also, that who is going to have the merit of lighting the bonfire in honor of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, a sage of the Mishnah, meaning to say that he lived 2,000 years ago, the time when Rome occupied Israel. Anyway, so they would do bidding for charity, to give charity. One year, this story is told by a great sage who was present in this story, it's part of the story, and he wrote a book called Bat Ayin, or Bas Ayin. And they refer to him, that's how we do it Jewishly, we refer to sages by the books they wrote, not exclusively, but a lot. So the Bas Ayin, that's what I'm going to call him, because honestly, I didn't have a chance today to look up his name, because I was delivering Chalas, and if you don't know what that's about, you should look at the email that came to you today. And thank you all those who were involved in that. So at any rate, the Bas Ayin is there, and people are bidding. How much they're going to pay in order to light this bonfire in honor of the anniversary of the passing of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? This is in Miron in Israel. And there's a fella, poor man, doesn't have money, and he outbids everybody. So the Bas Ayin relates. He asked him, how come you're outbidding everybody, and how are you going to pay for it? So this fella says to the Bas Ayin, he says, Rebbe, I want to honor you with lighting the fire in honor of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. This rabbi repeats his question. How are you going to be able to pay for it? He says, I don't have livelihood. Why do I need livelihood when I have no children to pass it on? So somehow, in the merit of me making this commitment, the Almighty will bless me, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai will intercede for me with God. Now again, I have to do another interjection, because I have to. You may ask, Jewishly, whether you know it or not, one is not permitted to assume any human being or anything is an intermediary between you and God. You pray to God himself. So how could you ask people for a blessing? Even though it's true that in our narrative, God says to Abraham, you can be a source of blessing. Unfortunately, I had planned to interject the explanation, but I'm looking at the clock and I can't. So if you do have that question, especially from what you may know, and you can remind me at some point, and then it would be my pleasure to answer you. It's a very fundamental question to Judaism, and I'd be happy to answer it. But at any rate, so when the Rebbe hears that this is what his motivation is, and this is what he hopes, but he's honored the rabbi to do it. So he says to this fellow, let us hold the lighting stick together. You and I are going to light the fire together, and the Almighty is going to bless you. Now, before I continue with what happened, you realize in the video, if you are seeing the subtitles, the Rebbe said that they will come out successful from the Six-Day War, that God will protect them. The other expressions that I used are later on in the talk. They're not in this clip, but they're going to be in the other clip, whose link I plan to post on the WhatsApp group. The Rebbe said to that other fellow, your child is going to need another child to play with. Okay. So he says, the Bas Ayin says, let us hold it together and we'll light it together and you will be blessed. And of course, within that year, this fellow's wife had a baby and they earned livelihood. Certainly he was able to pay up for his bid. And I told this story specifically because it not only relates to today, but it relates to asking for a blessing at the grave of another person. And we don't pray to a dead body, that would be idolatry. As I said, I can't explain it. So why did this story, why is it specifically on this day that people travel to Miron? This year, only 50 people were allowed by the government of Israel. But normally, there's, I don't know, 250,000, 500,000 people who come. It's unbelievable. Usually, I post a live link. Since the days of the internet, we can actually see what goes on over there. The throngs and people pitch tents. Unbelievable, the free hospitality that is provided there. People go there to pray, to ask for deliverance. And so many people will tell you that they were delivered that way. So how did this happen? So the shortened version of this story, for a reason that I'm just cutting out. I'm cutting out a number of elements just because of time. Okay, let's just keep it short that way. The Romans had taken charge over Israel. And for a reason, they wanted to get a hold of this rabbi, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, who is one of the sages of the Mishnah, which means the first and oldest part of the Talmud. It was transcribed 1,800 years ago, but he himself lived about 2,000 years ago. This is about the time of the destruction of the Second Temple. So he went with his son, and they went to a cave to hide. He survived there on carob, which is a fruit that grows in the Middle East, and water, which grew there miraculously. After 13 years, it was safe for him to come out. He came out. This Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is the author of the Zohar, which is the most fundamental, not the oldest, because we have a book that is from Abraham, a very small book of the mystical teachings by Abraham. That's 4,000 years old. We have it. But this book of the Zohar, where most of the Kabbalah is based upon, he is the author. He said to his students that I would like that the day I pass should be a day of celebration, not a day of sadness. And for the last 2,000 years, the Jewish people have fulfilled his wish and made it a day of celebration. The interesting thing is, how did Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai become such a great, in English they say mystic. I kind of don't like that word because mysticism means mystery. And in Hebrew, we really call it sod, which means secret. In other words, it's the inner wisdom of Judaism that for most of Jewish history was only taught to select people, but began to be publicized 500 years ago. And many of the greatest inspirational ideas you will ever hear from myself or any Chabad rabbi or any chassid for that matter, they're all based on the mystical teachings. In fact, the very reason that my wife and I live here to do what we're doing at this moment is based on those teachings, which is for another discussion. So, the interesting thing is, how did this Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai become this great? Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, for those who remember the class, I mentioned about in the 6th century of the 6th millennia, meaning from 1760 to 1860, this same Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai made a prediction that there's going to be a downpouring of inner wisdom, and that was the explosion of the Hasidic movement during that century. And he said there's going to be a major explosion of the scientific wisdom. Yes, he said that 2,000 years ago. It's written on the story of the flood. We had a whole class on it. It's the same person. And we already elaborated at length how the explosion of inventions that were obvious, you know, they were hidden in plain sight to everybody, the steam engine and other such things. And inventions have continued until this moment and continue. And he said they would converge. And they are converging because we're talking about his inner wisdom on this technology. So he made that prediction 2,000 years ago. Nobody could predict such a thing. So at any rate, how did he become such a great person that the whole Jewish people should keep his instruction to make this a day of celebration for 2,000 years? It begins with a story of his teacher. His teacher was Rabbi Akiva. Now Rabbi Akiva, and this story, which I'm truncating, but I'm going to keep the main element, it's a very hard story to live up to, but almost everyone needs to hear it and needs to try to live up to it, as you're about to hear. Rabbi Akiva was such a great sage. Our sages of the Talmud say, "Kulhu alibo de Rabbi Akiva." Everything is according to Rabbi Akiva. Whatever they mean by that is not important right now. But the sages of the Talmud, they say everything is according to the teachings of Rabbi Akiva. He's in the Mishnah and the revealed wisdom, and you'll soon hear about the inner wisdom. He had 24,000 students. 24,000 students. Not young teenagers whose parents want them to have a degree. People, adults, married people who wanted to follow his teachings. 24,000 of them in Israel. And for a reason, which in itself is important, germane to this day. Each one was so convinced that that their service of God was the right way. They behaved with intolerance to anyone who served God differently. Does that ring a bell? Yes. They died in a plague between Passover and Shavuot. These 49 days called the Omer, the days that we count from Passover to the giving of the Torah, 49 days, they died. And they stopped dying on this day, Lag BaOmer, 2,000 years ago. Now, Rabbi Akiva could have said to himself, and he could have said to God, I obviously have not been doing what you asked me to do. I built up 24,000 students who wanted to study your wisdom, and you caused them all to die in such a short amount of time. And you just take the number 20,000 and divide it by the amount of days, it means it was like a crazy amount of people dying every single day, like a plague. Well, that's exactly what it was. He could have quit. He could have given up. And he says, God, I'm just going to do my service of God between you and me by myself because you obviously don't want me to spread your wisdom. He would have been shattered. He had other disappointments in his life having to do with the Romans as well. But he didn't. You know what he did? He started all over again getting new students. And of his new students, he had five primary students. The primary student was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the author of the Zohar, the one who predicted the convergence of modern technology with the inner wisdom 2,000 years before it happened. That was one of his students. The one who taught that we all have a godly soul, that is one godly soul, we just happen to be in different bodies. And the Arizal, 500 years ago, elaborated, and we need to publicize these teachings. The Arizal, his teachings, then developed into teachings of Hasidut. You've heard that word. And within Hasidut, there's a branch called Chabad, where the first Chabad Rebbe took from the inner wisdom, and in the 32nd chapter of Tanya, points out how every Jewish person is so linked, because there's one godly soul shining into every body. What's the difference between you and me? The difference between one hand and another hand. In other words, you're one body. That's why you are. Which means that if you're born in London, England, let's say, in a religious community, and you marry somebody who's born in a religious community in Brooklyn, in Crown Heights, and you get married and you make a decision, we're going to live somewhere where we're not going to have proper religious education for our children, we're going to have to send them away, somewhere between the ages of 11 and 14, etc., etc. Why? So that you can reach out to other Jews and warm them up to the truth that there is a God in the world, and the whole universe was created for you to play a pivotal role in God's plan, etc., etc. Everything that we talk about in these classes, it's all based on the teachings of Hasidut, which is all based on the explanations of the inner wisdom of the Arizal 500 years ago, all of which is rooted in the Zohar from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai 2,000 years ago, who was the main student of Rabbi Akiva's second run at teaching the inner wisdom to be passed on. And here is the kicker. How did Rabbi Akiva become such a great student? Because of all of the sages of Israel throughout history, as you're about to hear, you will be able to relate to Rabbi Akiva more than you will be able to relate to any other sage ever in Jewish history. Here is his story. Rabbi Akiva was known as Akiva. His father was a convert to Judaism because at that time there were so many Romans in Israel. Both by the Roman historical accounts and by the records in the Talmud. Many, many Romans were sick of paganism. And at first, they used to call the Jews atheists as being the only people who believed in an invisible God. They didn't have an effigy or something that they made last week to worship. But these Romans who were conquering the whole world, according to the Roman annals, they actually give a number. They say fully 10% converted to Judaism, even though if they were discovered, there would be a penalty of death. Many of them became sages. Rabbi Akiva's father, who was one of these people, was not one of them. Akiva grew up as an ignoramus. He was a farmer in the field of this wealthy man called Kalba Savua. Kalba Savua means satisfied dog. People say any poor man who goes to this man's house, he can be as hungry as the hungriest dog, and he comes out satisfied. He was a great, great philanthropist, and he had a daughter. This daughter saw this 40-year-old man in the field and saw that he was a very special soul. Oh, yes, we've heard about girls having a crush for an older man. What else would be behind that? I know. Listen to the story because it's your story. You're going to hear it. He said, she said, her name was Rachel. I want to marry this man. His name is Akiva. And the father said, this is what I said at the beginning of this class. If you marry him, I'm disowning you. You're not getting one penny of my wealth. And she married him. But she made a condition. This Rachel said to this Akiva, I'm going to marry you on condition you become knowledgeable in Torah study. Well, it was an offer that he wanted, but he did not know to read Hebrew. Do you hear everybody? He did not know to recognize the first letter of the Aleph Bet. And he's 40 years old. And one day, he sees water in a cave that's dripping, and underneath the water, the rock is penetrated. You may have seen that in some waterfalls, but he was seeing not a waterfall, but just the dripping of water. And he says to himself, if water can penetrate this rock, then the Torah can penetrate my skull, my head, my mind. And he goes to school with the little kiddies, and he starts learning Aleph Bet. Now, to go to school, and then as he learns more, he has to go to study with the sages. So there's no telegrams, there's no mail, none of that's been invented yet. So, of course, his wife wants him to become a Torah scholar. She says, of course, you go, you travel to the sages, I'll figure out, I'll make a living by myself. And he goes and does not come back home for 7 years. She is so poor, even though she's raised in the lap of luxury, she becomes a laundry woman, which does not mean using a washing machine. It means collecting garments, taking it to the river, scrubbing them, and hanging them out to dry, and bringing them back clean. That wasn't enough at some point for her to survive, to have food to eat. She had very long hair. She cut off her hair and sold it. And I'm a man, so I cannot appreciate it as many as the women here can appreciate that if you have really long, beautiful hair, and just snip it off so you can have bread to eat. Anyway, people would taunt her. She's a young girl, beautiful girl. And, you think your husband's going to ever come back to you? He probably found another woman. It's been already 7 years. And one of these taunts, and she's responding what she always responded that I'm about to share with you, and Rabbi Akiva is coming back from studying in the yeshiva, and he overhears one of the guys taunting this girl again, and here's her response. She says, if I had it my way, I would have him be away studying God's wisdom for another 7 years. So he doesn't even come home. He turns around and he goes back. And he comes back 7 years later. He has 20,000 students. As he comes back to his wife, so he's coming with a whole entourage of students, and they see this beggar woman. It's 14 years later, so she couldn't be as young as she was 14 years prior, and it's not actually most beautifying to be scrubbing laundry for all those years and selling your hair, etc. So one of the students sees this beggar woman, coming forward to the rabbi, and is trying to make a motion. One of the students, you know, it's not appropriate. Rabbi Akiva said these famous words. It's recorded in the Talmud. Everything that I have and everything that you have is on account of her. And Rabbi Akiva bought her a gift. We don't see it that much in regular wear these days. You do see it in weddings sometimes. But the idea of wearing a crown, which in different parts of the world for many, many centuries was very common. So Rabbi Akiva, as a gift to his wife, that she had taken him from being an ignoramus, not knowing the first letter of the Hebrew language, how to read it, at age 40. And now he's 54, and he's the great sage of Israel. He makes for her a golden crown in which is engraved or embossed the image of Jerusalem. It's called Jerusalem of Gold. Yes, you've heard of that song, which is a recent composition. But that phrase, Jerusalem of Gold, comes from this story that the wife of Rabbi Akiva received, her name was Rachel, this gift. So what are we seeing here? Here is a woman who's a young girl who says, I want to marry this man. And the father says, I'm going to disown you. And here we are, 2,000 years later, the same man who loses these 24,000 students, not 20,000. He loses 24,000 students within these weeks, and he starts all over again. And there's a student, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who's hounded by the Romans, and he authors this book. And 500 years ago, I mean, those teachings come through all the years. It starts being really publicized more than 500 years ago, actually, Maimonides, we know very well from the actual language used in his book, and many secular scholars wouldn't believe this, but this is actually, that's only because they don't know how to read Hebrew, and they call themselves scholars of Judaic studies, which is kind of interesting. But anyway, the Rambam was already 850 years ago, was very familiar with the Zohar, because some of the quotes he has in his book of Jewish law, 14 books, are straight out of the Zohar, not from the Talmud, not from the Midrash, all of which come from the same era, the same people. So at any rate, these teachings of Rav Shimon bar Yochai come down to us in the forms of Hasidus, come in the form of a regular, plain person who's speaking right now on this Zoom conference. I'm just a regular person. I'm just trying to live in accordance with this teaching, which comes to us on account of this day, the day that the students stopped dying of Rabbi Akiva, the day that the next group of students, the top one, asked his passing should be a day of celebration. It was a day of miracles, and holy people throughout the ages, it's been a day of blessings. I just told you those stories. That's why this is here. So now, for the Jewish people, it comes as no surprise whatsoever that this story happened in 1835 that I told you, and the wife had a child. It comes as no surprise whatsoever that I could show you video clip after video clip, which maybe it'll take me time to find them and to put them on the group, WhatsApp group, so I don't want to make that commitment, where people will come to the Rebbe with a baby and say, this is the blessing that you gave me last year. Literally, you'll see it over and over again. And I'm choosing the Rebbe because he's my Rebbe, our Rebbe, and it's also on video. But he's not the only Rebbe. And I think I told another story last week of that happened with a Tosha Rebbe who passed away not so many years ago in Montreal. So now, here's what I would like to say, because I'm already over time significantly. I would like to say to you, you should know, you are a blessing for two reasons. One is whether you like it or not, your life is going to be a blessing. God just wants you to recognize that fact. That's why our sages, every person is obligated to say, the world is created for me. Of course it's created for everybody. That doesn't mean you become a maniac like somebody who wants to conquer the world, as has happened throughout the history of the world. But it means we're all part of this corporation or this corporate enterprise called the universe, which is journeying from creation to Mashiach. And if you were not needed, God did not put you here by mistake. We went through that last week on a different level. And if you have not heard last week's edited and posted class, you should listen to it. You are a blessing, especially the video clip towards the end. It's so moving. I've watched it so many times. And if I'm getting under your skin and not telling you, because I want you to do that, I want you to listen to the class. It's not stuff I make up. God's wisdom. I'm just a conveyor because I happen to be placed here for this purpose. That's what I'm doing. That's all. Here's the other part. You are given the power to give blessings. That's it. You are a blesser. God said to Abraham, go on a journey. Your children are going to inherit this land. They've all come true. And the fact that you have the power to give blessings is also true. Could you give blessings the way Rav Meir of Premishlan or any holy rabbi can? No. You know why? Because I'm not as connected above by any stretch the way they were. These are people who every thought, every speech, every action was in accordance with God's will. I didn't say they were perfect. Only God is perfect. I did say every thought, every speech, every action, they decided it should stay in accordance with God's will, which is the requirement, says Maimonides 850 years ago, for prophecy to descend on a person, any person, even a non-Jewish person. Yes, Maimonides writes that. So a person who's a plain person like you and me, I shouldn't say you and me, because all of you are doing something which I don't know that I would ever do. If I were raised in this modern world and all of its glitter and attractiveness, would I make a life-overhauling move to become religious the way I am now? I actually doubt it. I'm telling you the truth. I've said this to, if you've been around long enough, you've heard me say this before. So somebody like me, if I'm just intellectually honest, I don't have the intellectual right to be egotistical in your presence, because I know what you're doing. I know that you come from a world that every pleasure, permitted or forbidden, and everything in between, it's all available. And whether It's people who have tons of money or no money, tons of talent, no talent, fame or no fame, so-called easy street, I don't know if it exists, or living through hell decade after decade. You're all making a life journey that humbles people like me. It doesn't get in my way for saying what I'm saying in these classes because I don't make this stuff up. So what I'm saying to you is, today is Lag BaOmer. It's a day of special divine energy. There is a website called Ohel Chabad, O-H-E-L-L as in Larry. And the same word, Chabad, as the name of our organization, C for Charlie, H for Harold, A, B for brother, ohelchabad.org. You can go there and you can ask the Rebbe for a blessing. You can read up why it makes sense to do so. And even then, I still have to explain, if those of you who are interested, how is it possible you can ask a human being for a blessing, even though God already instructed Abraham. So how could this be? Why is it not considered an intermediary? Because we have no intermediaries. We pray straight to God. How could you ask a person, especially a dead person, for a blessing? So that's for another time. But I have told you a story. I don't have the time for the personal story, but I'm telling you that some of you have heard it, and many of you have witnessed part of it in this community, part of this blessing. I am saying to you, you have the power to bless, but you should ask for blessings the way the Jewish people do it. This is not a reason for you to believe Judaism is right. It's not a reason for you to believe in God. As I said, if I can get under your skin and have enough of you ask me to scientifically prove the truth of Judaism, I would love to do that. But the reason you should do it is because God has given the ability for you, yes, you and me, to harness divine energy for good. Not just God has placed you in a position where other people are going to be helped by you maybe many generations later. Like this girl whose name is Rachel. Did she have a clue that you would be warmed up to Judaism through these highlighted events that I mentioned in today's class? No way she could know that. That every Jewish person on this planet is blessed through the actions that she took. So I want to close this class and I want to say to you, if God is real, then his commitment that you can be a blesser of people is real. Bring the fluency in your mouth to say to people, may you be well, may you be healthy, God should grant you livelihood. However you want to say it, you are you, I am I. You don't have to do what I do. I use myself as an example because I've said this countless times and I will repeat it. I hate to be a talking head. Oh, he's a rabbi, he's got letters after his name. Nonsense. If a person has too many letters after their name, I don't know, maybe they have too much of an ego. No, I'm just a conveyor. I'm just a conveyor, and I have respect for all of you. That's what I want you to know. You are a blessing whether you like it or not, and God would like you to verbalize blessings to other people. Thank you very much for joining me.